Blog Talk Radio.
I just love that piece. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Exploring Ekphrasis with your hosts, Captain B2, Simwa, and Dan Deschino of the luscious and lovely voice out of Boston. Dan, are you with us?
I am. Well, thank you for a good introduction. I think I'm going to change my name to Captain D2 for Dan, and then we can just be twins. What do you think?
I love it.
That might work.
I was wondering when you would make. I was wondering when you're going to make that move.
Now, I don't know if that's fraudulent. I will say I was never actually in the forces, in any of the armed forces, but I can pretend.
Well,
right?
Then,
it's getting to be Halloween. I could pretend, maybe.
Absolutely, but you know what? We could do what they do in the South. Like the Kentucky colonels, we can make you an honorary colonel, so you can be Captain B2 and Colonel D2.
Ah, yes, excellent. Yes, Pee Wee Custon says Lieutenant Dan. Lieutenant Dan, that's what I could do. Absolutely. Absolutely.
When you hear any strange noises at this end, I apologize ahead of time, because it's me trying to balance a sandwich and a cup of tea and my phone back to my desk so we can
That's
have
okay.
our show.
Well, if you hear any strange noises on this end, if you hear any strange noises on this end, it's that baked bean supper I had for dinner, so there you go.
Oh, dear. I'm going to put you in my pocket for just a moment. I'll be right back.
Hey, no problem. Well, I will start us off then and keep talking. Well, I appreciate everybody coming on. Pee-wee is on the board. Thanks, Pee-wee, for joining. So we have a fantastic show for you tonight. I think we're going to kind of jump right in. We do have a bunch of carryovers from the last show, and then we're going to get into this show. So lots of poetry to read. When you get back, Bobby, I do want to apologize. I don't know where the error was. I'm certainly going to probably take it myself as the blame because it might have been me. But we have some of the wrong previous ones posted on the board, and that might have been my
really?
Fault. So, Bobby, I sent you the right ones. Yeah, those were from a couple of shows ago. The new ones I put on there are actually the right ones. So, if I sent you the wrong, if that was me, I apologize.
Well, you know what? I'm not just my credo is don't assign blame, just fix the problem.
There you go. That's right. Well, see, if we both take the blame together, then it evens out and there's no one to blame.
If it pleases you, okay.
Excellent. So, yes, but we should get right started because we have lots of fun things here.
If you have the right ones lined up, I can certainly make the edits and plug them in.
Okay, cool. I sent you all the right ones. We actually have a bunch of them, including a SoundCloud. So I think we should probably get cranking here.
Yes, we should.
And I will, since I know you're feeling a little under the weather, but being the contributor here, I will. I'm going to give the first one a read because it's a little long one.
Well, the weirdest sore throat I've ever had, because it wasn't in my throat. It was actually in my mouth near the base of my tongue. And every time I try to swallow, it would hurt like hell. But it kept me awake. So let me see. I'm looking for where you put the carryover.
Yeah, I sent them to you on your, just to send you personally. Perfect.
I found them. Yes, I did. And here they are.
All right.
I'm picking them up and moving them over. And let's see.
Perfect.
Edit. Blessed be the name of edit. Okay.
Yeah, and while you're doing that, what I'll do is I'm going to get started and just read this first one because it is a little long, and I want to get cranking so we can make sure we get through as many as we can tonight.
Got it.
So
well done.
The first one here I posted on the board is by Victoria Frost. It is called Chicken Feet and Fiery Skulls. Great title. Behind the suffocating mist, deep in the belly of the Black Forest, where even the sun's warmth has abandoned hope, giving way to the bitter cold. Into the impenetrable darkness of the forest, where the brave do not go, and only the foolish and ignorant wander, stands the house of Baba Yaga, shutting in its yard with a mouth and a peck seed. It kneels down before her guest, breaking the silence of her surroundings, while the groaning of her old wooden door beckoning you to come in, sit before you, your babushka, and make a deal. And though this place hides away from the golden rays of the sun, the watchful eyes of the burning skulls eagerly gaze deep into the soul of those that find their way to the cobblestone path. Each stone another weight upon the scale, pulling the plate down into your demise as you offer up your worth in hopes of gathering a little light to warm your family's abode. And like the stone stuck beneath your ever-cautious feet, the lump in your throat grows larger with each step towards the home of the wary Baba Yaga. Once inside, the locks all click with the resolve of scraping metal, covering the contemplative scraping of Baba Yaga's fork upon her empty plate and the hunger in her dark, sunken eyes. As her lips peel back from the crooked yellow grin, in a barring of teeth, hardly worth being called a smile, when she looks upon tomorrow's supper, wetting the corners of her mummified grimace with the drooling thought for a delicate medium rare roast carved from the not-so-innocent's back. But even as her bony claws tease the plump flesh of youth, her skin sags with its years of wisdom and deals made in the midnight hour to gather herbs for the devil in her mortar. She's reminded that even a young lamb does not come to the butcher willing to be slaughtered. And so a deal is struck, a bit of labor to test the weight of a word. With a voice of gravel, the first test is posed. Will you serve me? She smiles, the fork nonchalantly, scraping the clay of her worn plates. Yes, babushka, for what polite grandchild would wish to ignore their grandmother in her older years when she is frail and wishes only for a bit of reprieve? Who might rise with the morning to make the breakfast so the babushka's bones might be warmed a little longer to greet the day? And once the day has begun, the chores been given, how might a grandchild show her respect but to clear her list one task at a time, so that babushka might gather her herbs, tend to her tasks that feed her soul, and allow her a moment to be taken care of after years of tending to her own? Then, too, my babushka be greeted with a pumpkin supper soup to warm her belly in the piercing cold when the world has forsaken her, a reminder that she is not forgotten, and yet Yet an old soul has little patience when their bones ache. And so even when harsh, kindness still shows through. Cleaning up the shards of day, thrown in frustration for the loss of a medium rare roast, the hopes of a warm full belly, but a promise is a promise, and the scales cannot be forced, even into Baba Yaga's favor. When a soul is found to be in commune with the world and holds value in more than selfishness and greed. Thus, with a sigh, Baba Yaga bids the girl goodbye with the fiery eyes of a skull to keep her safe, away from the dark confines of the forest belly to cast their judgment on those that would send the lamb so readily to the butcher block when it was not yet their time for the slaughter, instead returning the deceptive back to the dirt they are from to fade away into the wind, find their way into the black belly of the beast, and take seat upon the fence of Baba Yaga. To watch the evil of the world come shuffling up to the old cottage, trembling at the strutting of the cottage's feet, gaze into the ever-hungry eyes of Baba Yaga and the fiery eyes in her garden of souls. End poem. So just real quick, since I read all that, I will say, written on property King Baba Yaga. Thank you. Baba Yaga's original story told in pictures, not much written, but a common thread of to keep children close, they yea, to be taken by her to be eaten. So yeah, since it's just us now, I do want to comment on this. I thought that this is just absolutely fantastic. I love when poets make stories. I really think that, Victoria is a master of that. I remember last mm-hmm. year, that's pretty much when I first started with this. I've only been on this site about a year or so. It was one of the first things I wrote was for Victoria's show where she's telling different stories, Halloween stories. She's got another one this year, which I entered as well too. And so this I think really fits her really well. And I just love where she went with it because she was saying that it is an old story to scare children, but wasn't really I never heard of it before until I read this. By the way, hey Lou, welcome for coming on. Lou. By the way, thanks for coming on. I hear you're laughing there, so I have to say hi.
Hi, guys. Hi, Dan.
Hey, how are you?
Hey,
Bobby. I thought I recognized that giggle.
Well, you know what? The thing is that, I know you didn't ask me to comment yet, but when you read that title to her poem, you cannot help but smile through this whole thing because I just saw chicken and yellow teeth and yellow skin and
Well,
great
I love how she
telling.
Didn't go. No, it was. She did a great job, and I just love just to. I love where she went because she basically didn't. She didn't make it like a horror story. It's more just setting this mood of the picture. Where the kid went off. It went away. The kid wasn't eaten and destroyed in the house. It was more just kind of a really mood setting and very, very descriptive. So I thought it was really beautiful and I'm really glad that she did it as kind of like an epic mm-hmm. and a story. It was really worth the read and brought everybody in. So beautiful job and awesome epic poem here.
She did pick up some very significant details of the artwork because I never wrote a piece of last year, and I am Slavic, so I did a lot of research in it because I'd heard the story before. It's a witch who steals, cooks, and eats her victims, usually children, she lives in a forest hut that spins continually. Bird's legs, and the fence is topped with human skulls, and she's captured every part of that detail from the Baba Yaga a legend. And Baba Yaga flies through the air on not a broom, but an iron kettle or a mortar that she drives with a pestle. And it is a story that they always use to frighten. Children, of course, it has outshoots into other cultures like Hansel and Gretel.
Yes, absolutely. Exactly.
Yeah, well, lucky for this kid, she was scraping her plate and already full, so she let the kid go. So but Lulu,
okay, I think she's a master at storytelling. You know, these are things that it's everywhere. Stories that you tell kids, like here, you know, like if you would go outside, we would say, you know, when kids wouldn't listen, ooey-cooey, right? So then the kid would, you know, they perk up, but then the parent, you expand it by going ooey-cooey, and you know, just to scare the kid, you know, that you're going to be taken away. The cuckoo's going to get you. And, you know, and she did that so well in storytelling. I'm sorry, you know, the story of hunger when people lived in villages, it just took you back to that time where you had to travel through the forest. And there was a lot of dangers in the forest. You know, of course, there's things that kids could eat and they could pick. There could be people that would take them. You know, they would take them as slaves to work in their homes. Or they would fall and hurt themselves and nobody would find them. So to keep the kids on the path, you would have to, sometimes tell them there is reasons you need to be afraid because are monsters. And, you know, we call them, people can be monsters or animals can be monsters that can eat. They can eat you like bears or something like that. But I thought this was so well told because I'm not good with horror because I had to grow up with horror, but this I could handle. So it was thoroughly enjoyable. It's like, you know, like she said, it was like a wicked version, darker version of Hansel and Gretel.
Yeah. You make a fascinating point that how often as parents adults will invoke terror in their children just to protect them. I mean, my God.
Exactly.
That sounds like an oxymoron that you want to terrify your child in order to protect them. It's a delicate dance. You reminded me of something that my dad did when I was a kid. They were worried about, you know, how kids touch the wrong things. They'll touch a hot stove, and you know, and they're always worried about the child. Well, my dad told me this story. He said, you were scooting around on your little scooter. He said, you're about a year and a half old. He said, and we had just gotten through cooking dinner, and the oven was warm. It was not hot. It was warm. He said, I got you up there. He said, I took your little hand and put it against the side of the warm oven. And he said, your eyes popped open and you jerked it away. And I looked at you and I said, hot. I looked at him and he said, hot. And so it actually worked to their advantage because if there was anything around, breakable, or they didn't want me touching, it became hot.
Well, that's good because you know the thing is that okay, look at you. Some children can learn from simple examples. Other ones have that, like when grandmother used to call us wild Indians. You know, when some kids are more wild than others, and sometimes they learn by mistake. But sometimes, you know, you have to emphasize something a little more. Not that parents do that on purpose. But you know, I do remember my grandma. And you know, just listening to her voice would affect me. And the same thing with the storytell, because this stuff gets passed down, and like with storytelling, things get made up and they change, but it still keeps its same essence. Isn't that fascinating?
Well, would you like to read our next piece for us?
Yes, I would. I hope
that,
I can read
though,
it.
Before we do,
I'm sorry,
ahead,
Ben.
Sorry. Before we do that, we actually have another guest star on here as well too. Before we do that, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, Lou. I just wanted to give Frank welcome and give him time to comment. Hey, Frank.
Hello, everyone. Hello, everyone. I thought I'd just stay with Little Red Riding Hood after hearing that little story there.
So true.
It was a great poem. I have to say, I'm going to just be brief here. I think the poem was just an incredible write. I do agree, she's a very talented poet. So I'll leave it as that, because I know everything that's been said would just be echoed by me.
Hey, no problem. Thanks, Frank. I appreciate it. And boy, I got to tell you, this is going to be an exciting show, because I think there's been a lot of caffeine drunk around the world right now, as I can tell, because everybody's really excited. It's, you know what it is? It's Victoria. She started us off with that great poem, so we're all excited now. Anyway, yes, Lou, you can read the next one after this one, because I actually have a SoundCloud for the one we put up by Hall of Mindfulness. So if we can get that played, that would be great.
Adam's apple. The double-edged sword of a thinking mind, brought on by an apple, Adam so blind to just what eating from the tree of knowledge would bring, the self-centered ego at the heart of everything. Without it, there is wonder with a sense of quiet joy. With it, there is separation with good and bad to employ. Getting swallowed by the dark as we reach for the light, its love and welcome as natural as day embracing night. We can return to the Garden of Eden when we use knowledge wisely, not for ego's reason. Butterflies teach in acceptance of pain. Transformation is possible through beauty to gain. Open to old wounds and release their weight. Rest in the ordinary. It's never too late. Discard the masks into be one and all. Be aware as presence and heed love's call. End of poem. Samantha Hall. Hall of Mindfulness.
Awesome read. That was great. And I need to pay attention more, because I never realized her name was Samantha Hall, but now Hall of Mindfulness makes all kinds of sense. But awesome poem, awesome read. Frank, we're going to start with you.
Ooh. Well, first of all, say it was a remarkable supper club there. The poem itself, naturally, it brings this connotation of the Garden of Eden, which we are all acquainted with. But I like the way she stresses the notion here, in particular, of the old wounds, you know, releasing their weight, you know, and talking about discarding the mask. I think there's so much in this poem here that really is really profound. It really just touches me on that aspect of knowing what, first of all, if we know what the tale is, of course, of the biblical tale, then we have an inference. But once we understand that, we know that, and get onto the poem, she really touches on the issues there that I really like about discarding the mask, and really how relevant it is to find your, I call it the satiety, yourself. So in that regard, this poem was very, she was very proficient in that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Luyu, what do you think?
You know, I think she did a fantastic job in illustrating this. Her metaphors were just fantastic. I was looking at the photograph. The hands, actually, to me, because of the darkness and the long nails, reminded me of the opening of a serpent's mouth. And that apple there, you know, it's got like tendrils, like the sin from eating it was penetrating their perfection. And I thought that she caught that because even she's got a cut on her face. Even when we sin, we can learn from our mistakes, and there is freedom from that. And I did get that from her poem, the release of, you know, the butterflies, showing that, you know, no matter how bad things can get, you know, there is something that we can learn, and in learning, there is enjoyment. So I really thought that she got that when she said that getting swallowed by the dark as we reach for the light, it's love and welcome as natural as day embracing night. You know, sometimes people only learn by pain, unfortunately.
Yeah, that is way
too
true. Yeah, absolutely. Way too true, especially in my life. I will not learn unless I, like, you know, like Bobby said, don't touch the stove. Well, I've touched the stove way too many times. But Bobby, yeah, and these paintings are great, though, Bobby, right? That's why you did two contests on them.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I couldn't when I started going through his work, I found so much potential in it that I had to do the two contests because I just wanted to share it all with our poets, and the result has been staggering. I mean, this piece, I love how it has a sweet sadness to it. It speaks of redemption. It speaks of transformation, beauty, but it speaks of pain also, and it reminds us that there is not one without the other, and to really savor life, you've got to have a little salt in there to be able to appreciate the sweet, and she's done it. With this prompt, which I think is just an inspired interpretation, and I've decided to start following. And I also like her play on words with her nom de plume.
Absolutely, mm-hmm. And yep, there's always the yin and yang, right? All right,
yes,
cool.
Yes.
Let's move on. We got a few more from the last contest. So, Lou, if you want to read this one by Scott Sharp, that would be great.
Okay. The Graveyard by S. Sharp. Death shades everything. Full moon shadow cat. A black cat ready to pounce. Memories. Grave markers. Scattered. Tipped over. Uncertainty. Who? What? Herein lays in the ground. The trees stand leafless. Their naked arms reaching to the sky, praying through the darkness like memories, hoping they'll survive in poem. Mm-hmm.
Awesome, awesome. And Scott's really great at those short little phrases that really impact. I'm going to start again with you, Frank, if that's okay.
No, that's not a problem with me. First of all, I thought the read was fantastic there. The poem was fantastic. I really like the surreal imagery in this poem here. You know, the way it's described here, it almost seems that, you know, it's so visualized, you know. I could see the imagery play out through the whole poem. And what I really like, you know, I don't need the prompt really necessarily to know what's going on here. But I really like the fact that he incorporates the darkness here in such a fashion that it's really admirable. I really like the way he incorporates the aspect of the visual aspect of what a graveyard is and what attachment is to death, which is certainly something that we're not fond of, but it is something that is a shadow that eventually catches up to us.
No, excellent comment. I agree. You know, just that first phrase, death shades everything, is just,
yeah,
you know, an interesting way to think about a graveyard, which is really, really what it is. You know, it's, a bunch of people buried. It's death.
Been around so many of those to know that, unfortunately, my friend.
Yeah, absolutely. I got you. And Lou, you read it fantastic. What do you think?
You know, I had to go look at the picture because it's just totally fascinating me. It was a powerful, compact, you know, yep, brevity. And he, all these little extras that were in that picture that that Bobby found, you know, I could see the trees reaching and praying. I could see this cat because the cat's eyes are so huge. And you see the graveyard, and then on the side of him, you see that what appears to be knocked over headstones. And, you know, you question things like that when you see it. You know, why, when, what prompts you to do something like this? And then, you know, for those who actually give a shit, you know, who actually care about, you know, a privacy and honoring the dead and showing respect for the dead, you know, you hope that whoever did this is not going to be up in that one of these holes coming up soon. You know, will they survive? You know, it's just, I just, God, this was just awesome. Awesome sauce.
Yeah, I don't know why people do those type of protests. It makes no sense to me. There was somebody today, actually, Picasso's painting of sunflowers threw tomato soup on it in a protest of some sort of environmental protest. Wait, it wasn't harmed. So that was good. I guess they actually have glass in front of it. Why it makes zero sense why people would do that.
I was in the UK, I believe.
Did you hear what happened at the Vatican? Did you hear what happened to the Vatican? Yes, there was a bus, and some man went through there and was knocking them over. They were breaking.
They were able to stop them.
Yeah, exactly.
It's horrible. I mean, senseless. Yes. It's just ridiculous. Anyway, on a lighter side, somebody named BlackLotus84 commented on this, said, "The graveyard is where I go when the world pisses me off." So I thought that was kind of funny.
Bobby, is that literally?
On that note,
it's literally.
Yeah, exactly.
Horrible day in play there.
No, I think,
that's right.
This is a stunning brevity. I gotta admire the work that Scott did in this, and especially like what you said, he picked up the minutia in the artwork, and that's where I'm gonna tip my hand. That's where you get bonus points as far as I'm concerned. I'm a detail person.
Yeah.
If you can look at the artwork and you can see the little things that the artist has so painstakingly and lovingly included. Choice of colors, choice of subject, a placement of things, and that, if that inspires your writing, to me that is just that's sauce for the goose. It's beautiful.
Yeah, Scott's great, and I've promoted his books before. He's got a couple of books out, so everybody should go check him out. He's got he's a great poet. All right, cool. Let's move on here. So, Frank, I started with you last time because I knew you were going to be the reader. Give you a little break. So now, if you wouldn't mind reading this one for us, that would be great.
All right.
That I just posted.
This is a poem. All right. This is a poem by Alchemist. It's called Dancing of the Moon. It's needed to be with you. It goes like this. Mountain monastery welcomes weekend witch. Come to purge the pain, passion, left loss of time. Walls alive with healing vibes, watching ways. We come apart, broken, bit, relentless reading, bringing fallacious beliefs beyond beliefs. A relegated is myth, not necessarily bad, just not real. And at the time, the walls of the home we shared, I dared to leave. Leftover love, unrequited, quieted for a time. Bomb, dick, self, spirit. Spirit entwined, hell-bent on having it all facing the fall, I go to the mountains to dance. Drums pump, sacred circle rhythms, release reality. Added to magic emotion, long hair free, wet with sweat, sweet release of what was kept, hidden in the depths of despair. Channel, change, rearrange, the me that was the she. Ecstatic motion, lost in motion, releasing seeds of who I used to be. Wolf arises on horizon of closed. Eye stalks around, down and in between. Soft fur seductively touches. Legs pumping with blood. Becoming independent. Spirit guides. End of poem.
Excellent, Frank. You are just as good live as you are recorded. Yeah, fantastic.
Oh, there you go.
We got some serious readers. We got some great performers tonight, Bobby, I got to tell you.
That's a great
poem. Always. Oh, that was a
The poem was fantastic. And let's start with you, Bobby, actually. We don't usually do that.
No, I'm fine. I'm, as long as I'm getting a little tea down my throat, I'm doing okay. God bless warm liquids. this is a really evocative piece. I mean, I like Alchemist's writing. She has a wonderfully imaginative approach to her subject matter, and clearly it's just here. I mean, relentless bringing fallacious beliefs beyond beliefs of relegated isness, not necessarily bad, just not real. That's a complicated write right there, that second stanza. That took some real dexterity of crafting. And she's done that through the whole thing. Drums pump, reality, release reality, shift banality to magical motion. She's had a good time with her language in here, her choice of words, a wonderful wordplay, channel change, rearrange, that me, that was the she, ecstatic motion, lost in emotion. This is a fun read. This is one of those reads that you really look forward to in a contest, and you end up with arm wrestling matches just to see who's going to read it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no, this is great. I like Alchemist as well, too. And as a drummer, I like the drums pump sacred circle rhythms, that kind of a little hint to drum circles for anybody who knows what that is. So I thought that was kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
Liu, what are your thoughts?
I thought Frank did a fantastic job in reading Alchemist's poem. This was just fantastic. I love the imagery that she put in here. You know, to me, you know, we all, when we leave home, because it says, that she says here, where she says that she left her home and that she came back and she went to the mountains to dance. You know, sometimes our life in the land calls us to go back home. And, you know, to me, I hear I see those bells of chiming where she's remembering her lost loves. And it was, to me, it was like you could see the images of those she loved on this wall. And, you know, of course, the white wolf is the healing spirit, Native American, also Celtic. And, you know, there is something about going back home and dancing and the sacred circle rhythms of reality, shift banality to magical motion. And it does here. And, it, you know, your spirit animal will show up and guide you. And I thought this was beautiful storytelling.
Absolutely. Wonderful. Absolutely. And Frank, you did an awesome job reading it. What do you think?
Well, I'm going to have to agree with what's been said here. You know, there is a connection here with nature, you know, whether we have, you know, whether we relate to the ambience of nature by itself, or we relate to the creatures or the animals that are within that ambience of nature. I really like the notion there of finding, you know, a sense of your own self, you know, that we have to seek and find comfort in things that we appreciate. And I like the connection there with the wolf as well, the Native American aspect that Lou was saying. This is very, very much evocative in that sense. I really like the way she pours out her heart and her thoughts in this piece here, and finding that reminiscence about reconnection, I would say.
Cool. Excellent. Thank you. And welcome, Phil, to the board. I don't know if she's going to call in or not, but wherever you are, Phil, calling in, board, hanging around somewhere else, we appreciate you all the time. you are a fearless leader, so we always appreciate you.
All
right, cool. Exactly. Let's keep moving on here. So, Bobby, you didn't get to read yet, and I put nice brevity up for you.
Ooh. How tasty. Okay, let's see what we got here. Oh, Myriad Dark. Lovely. No, I you know, somebody ought to have a contest and just have people write about their nom de plumes. There's some great stories out there. A Cathedral of Word and Thought by Myriad Dark. Hollow points dipped in irony, matching typewritten parables, making up a papier-mâché messiah, tapping out keystroke prayers in pentatonic scales, inscribed Georgian chanting.
acrobatic caterwauling, or a waxing, and a waning rosary window lets the word, and the baptismal word is font. End poem.
Great read. Thank you very much. And I didn't even get by hollow points dipped in irony. What an amazing line that was. Lou, let's start with you.
You know, I actually thought this was beautiful. You know, you could just see the cathedrals in the back of this typewriter where there's time and, you know, to me, typing, like it says, parables. And what I loved here was when he said, tapping out keystroke prayers and pentatonic scales inscribed in Gregorian chants. So then I could hear the Gregorian chants along with that old-fashioned type. So it made me smile. I love it when something you write comes to life in our minds when we read it.
Absolutely, yeah.
Good read, Bobby.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Great read, great comment. And Frank.
Yes, you know, this is the epitome of what you know, what we see when we see a cathedral, how much we are influenced by the art, you know, the craft of art itself and the architecture as well. There's so much beauty within a cathedral, you know, that you see these type of depictions there. What I like about this poem here is just what the, you know, the title itself, a cathedral world and so on. Now, we form our own thoughts upon, you know, the images that we see. And I like the way that Lou described it as with the chanting there and typing there at the same time. This was just a wonderful, wonderful visual poem that really just, I could see the visuals throughout this poem, even though it's not a lengthy poem. But it was a great read and a great job there.
Yeah, absolutely. Frank, thank you. And you did an awesome job, Bobby, with the read. What were your thoughts?
Thank you. I enjoyed the delicacy of this piece. It's got some wonderful thought-provoking phrasing in it. It's hollow points dipped in irony, which I think is, you can take that in a couple of different ways. You can think of a hollow point as an ammunition round, or you can think of a hollow point in terms of a fountain pen nib dipped in irony for its ink. Matching typewritten parables make a papier-mâché messiah. What a wonderful transition from typewritten and to typing paper, tapping out keystroke prayers in pentatonic scales. Which, again, very provocative, inscribed Georgian chanting, acrobatic caterwauling. Fascinating way the two lines are wedded to each other, because I am awfully fond of Gregorian chant, and
me too.
To me, very, very complex. But she talks about waxing and waning rosary window, and your most famous rosary window, of course, being in Notre Dame, and then the final coup de grace with the final piece of wonderful, dexterous wordplay, and the baptismal word is font. And that's what the baptismal basin is called, is a baptismal font. Yet we as writers concern ourselves with font in a different way. So I thought that the delicacy with which he balanced that at the end is just superb.
Yeah, absolutely. Always amazing poems everywhere. I can't get away from on the site. All I do is get inspired. All right, cool. We're gonna continue on. Actually, we have one more from the previous contest. Believe it or not, we're still actually working on. And I'll give this one a read. This is by Joseph Damasio, called Between Your Sheets. While the city sleeps in its own turmoil, I collected what was left of my heart and took an evening out for a swim. I searched for you every crevice, every window, every alley, but none. None show the chandeliers of your eyes, the centerpieces of your smile, the monument of your elegance in your fashion sense. You wore dresses even in winter, refused to acclimate to the climate, to its shadowy horizon, and slept comfortably behind walls I could not see. The night sang of lovers' tunes, of the recollected stories enjoyed day by day. I swam up and down, cold and desolate streets, for I would rather be on my own than to lie awake at home, knowing you have someone between your sheets. End poem. And I'm going to read the epilogue, too. Boy, I should have had Frank read that one, huh? That would have been a good one for him. But I'm going to read the epilogue here. I am like a giant goldfish trapped in the bowl of the cyclical routine-like notions of my everyday life. You appear twice a week to feed me with your aroma, to smile in my direction, to shed some of your own artificial light in my cold and desolate cell. I love you every time you enter my space, but my night, I'm revisiting every square inch of the memories that inhabit your visits, along with the moments I can only hope contain. Behind closed eyes, does my imagination speak of your beauty being admired by only me? I am like a giant goldfish trapped in the memories of you that my heart cannot contain but must release. And epilogue. So excellent job, Joseph. And Frank, what are your thoughts?
First of all, I thought it was a great epilogue read there by you, my friend. I have to say that this poem really is touching. It's the romance as well, the nostalgia. It has it just conjured to me so much an array of emotions there that really dig deep down into the mind, you know, and the discovery of what someone who really you completely are enraptured with, what they actually represent to you, and the emotional and, you know, aspect as well. And, you know, there is a sense of admission here in the end when you say, then to lie awake at home, knowing you have someone between your sheets. There can be nothing more beautiful than that notion of trying to have that person with you in the most intimate way of expression of love. So I thought this poem really had an array of conglomeration of just, you know, emotions, you know, throughout the poem. So I thought it was a fantastic read and a fantastic poem.
Thanks, Frank. Yeah, I think I just thought taking that notion of the goldfish that, you know, never supposedly has no memory and turning it into this this type of poem, I think was just genius. It was beautiful.
Yeah, I agree with that, too.
Lou, absolutely. Lou, what do you think?
I thought you did a fantastic read of this, Daniel, and I really enjoyed this poem by Joseph because just like Frank, it's just something about it that pulls you in. There's such a deep sadness here, you know, because, you know, we always see goldfishes in these little bowls. They go round and round and round and round. Okay? And yep. That's all they do because that's all the space they have. And this is just reminding me of somebody that is haunted by a past love that goes searches all the old places and then can't find his love there and then starts looking in new places, trying to see if he can see the love of his life. And he can't find her, and, you know, he's just going round and round. She's not seen. And, you know, and the world is going on. There's people walking on the street. Some of these places, like this picture, looks a little seedy, dark, those back alleyways in England where the night stalker was, you know. And then I see the cats. The cats are walking on the wall, going on with their lives. You know, of course, they watch you when you walk by them. And you're just going round and round like this goldfish, them big old eyes, just gulping in air, and you can't find it. You know, he's looking for her in the night. He says the night sang of lover's tune of the recollected stories enjoyed day by day. You know, because when you're with somebody, you do share those stories and things that you share between each other. But now he goes, I swam. This is so sad. I'm just like, ugh. I swam up and down cold and desolate street, for I would rather be on my own than to lie awake at home knowing you have someone between your sheets. You know, and then he has that realization that the reason he can't find her on the street is because she's under the sheets with her possible new lover.
Oh, That's a cold shower there.
Yeah.
Just a realization for us to realize that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Cool. Believe it or not, we are now on to our new contest. We are very, very excited. Absolutely. And we can probably just kind of keep going because it's the same.
I mean, I don't get
it's the same artist,
this,
right, Bobby?
Yeah, I don't get
to talk about it if you want. Sure.
The last poem.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I miss you? I'm so sorry. I apologize. I was so excited to get to the new contest. I forgot our my co-host here.
I know. You're in such a hurry to move over. I wanted to compliment the author on the imaginative use of the prompt. I looked at that prompt and I thought, I wonder where this one's going to go. And this is a beautiful use of the ekphrasis and the melancholy, the longing in it, and just from this image. Sometimes with the author's writing, I get intrigued by their style, and so I quickly dash over to their homepage. And Mr. Damasio, and Mr. Damasio, if you look at his homepage, it's a very characteristically floral background. But if I can offer, it is a very subtle statement on his last name, because Damasio is very close to the Damascene, which is the type of rose he has featured on his background page. This is a Damascene rose. So I thought with that kind of attention to detail, I wanted to see where this man's writing was going. And I think I'm going to pick him up and follow him, because I'm hoping that we'll see more of him.
Yes, yes.
All
right, cool.
Yeah.
And on that happy note, yes, we will move on.
As John F. Kennedy used to say, let us go forth with great vigor.
That's right.
I like the way you said vigor.
He was from Boston, and he used to say, let us go forth with great vigor.
Yes. Yeah, so, now, why does that make me sad that you can do a better Boston accent than me, and I live here, so I don't know. That makes me sad.
You haven't
got it up yet.
We'll have dialect one night.
Park the car.
That's right. Park the car.
That's New York. Isn't that a New York accent there? Park the car.
Yeah.
I grew up
with a dear lady who spent her entire life and mine transposing her V's and her W's. So I grew up with wunderbar Windiger. So we have the same artist. We have the same artist. There was no rhyme or reason to the sort I did. Threw them up in the air and stood under them, and whoever landed to one side got on one contest, and whoever landed to the other. Anyway, that's a lie, but it's actually a very imaginative lie. No, seriously, there was no rhyme.
You're so bad, Bobby.
You're very jovial tonight, Bobby.
With my Solomon-like wisdom, I cut the artwork in half. No one seemed to complain, at least of all the artwork. There we have the second half of the wonderful collection of Andrew Ferez. So let us go forth with great vigor.
Yes, let's go forth. Lou, I'm searching everywhere. Did you have a poem? Because I cannot find it for this contest. Did you have one that you posted up?
If you want to, you can do the next poem and I'll get it. I'll post it for you.
Okay, that would be great. Yeah, if you don't mind. I'm sorry. I was looking everywhere for it and I could not find it. So I apologize for that.
That's okay. I missed the contest, but I had to write.
Shame on you. Shame on you there.
No, no problem.
I know. I'm so bad with deadlines.
No, it's okay. I was looking on the board, and I must have missed it. I apologize. But, let's go forward. So, Frank, I'm going
to... No problema.
Thank you. I'm going to hold on a second. I am losing myself all over here. Hold on a second here. I'm clicking like a madman. Did you know that's the best way, right? If you if your computer's stuck, just start clicking wildly as much as possible.
That doesn't work for me. Okay. I wish it did.
I know. I'm joking.
We hear the clacking in the background there.
Anyway, Lou, you actually saved me because you posted yours. So let's go with yours.
Okay. All right. Thank you. And I'm sorry I have to leave, but this headache is killing me. And I just fell in love with this picture. And I titled it Railway Madman Child. And the reason it's actually Railway Madman, because when the train started first coming through in the 1800s, they believed the clicking and the sounds of the train would – people actually went insane in some instances. And so they believed that you would die from the, you know, from the disease of this train. So that's what caught me, because I looked at this as, you know, like during Victorian times. Railway Mad Child. Steam engine clacks, winding long, chastising tongue, steamy reminders, peppery, brutish releases, tear-stained mementos, licking flames bound in oxidized, yellowed, round-spotted innocence, love's deterioration, queen's olive oil nutrients, hailed by your foul-smelling shrill voice, freak you disparaging child! Forced bitters, gagging, heaving rancid oils, gold-stamped, silver threads, weave pulled, stable hair markers, pieces played, limbs pulled, dragged in majesty's checkered marble lines of nightfall's assassination, documented child's feather inky fingertips, banded outcries between stained, speckled, pearled ash pages, powdery organza, azurite ribbons, waltz round our set places, wad, indigo, yellow calfskin claimed purity, red blend stains racked in consumption with embroidered ruffles, crowned your initials, listening intently for your last bloody wheezy cough, wondering, as I gaze at your door, deranged laughter, hearing gurgling, coughing fits, as the train travels, clicks, clacks, shattering your rain, railway media, I whisper, the queen is dying. I wait, glancing wide-eyed at ink pain. I whisper, the queen's insane. Brutal last cough, the queen's dead. Click. And boom.
Amazing read there, Lou. And even though you have a splitting headache, I mean, it's all about the performance, right? There you go. You gave it your all. That was beautiful read.
That was great.
Yeah, it was funny when you mentioned that about the click-clack. I never heard that one, but it reminded me of people used to think that taking your picture was like stealing your soul and putting it in the picture.
Yeah,
there's
the Indian.
All those, yeah. There was a lot of that, which.
Yeah, many cultures feel that way.
Which maybe that is, I don't know. I actually did write a poem about that a while back. Anyway, awesome read. This is a beautiful poem. Bobby, let's actually start with you.
Oh, I am so glad that you contributed this. That was a fascinating picture to me as well. And but where you took it was just absolutely fascinating, that you took the technology and wove it in with early misinterpretations or myths or misconceptions of and which happens so frequently with newer technologies. You know, don't put the phone next to your head. You'll get brain dead. You'll get brain tumors. You know, just don't listen to the train because it'll drive you mad. I really enjoyed your descriptions. They're so rich, and your reading was truly brought out the real flavor of what you've written here. So thank you so much for contributing this, and I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Yeah, I agree. The descriptions are absolutely amazing, as always with you, Lou. And yeah, the imagination of where you took this, and that seems to be, I always look for themes in our shows, Captain, and this one seems to be just kind of going in directions that are so imaginative. There's really great great imagination that people are getting from these poems tonight, which is awesome. Frank, your thoughts?
Well, just listening to that, I'm going to have to veer off the railway tonight so I don't have to encounter this new there. This was just an awesome performance there. And one actor to another actor there. You did a fantastic job. I even like the way you uttered there. Let me scroll up here. Yeah, the one with the little shriek. It almost sounded like a shriek there. Where you know, drink, you despair in child. Yeah, that was very, very good. I like the whole notion of Bobby was saying, you know, the attachment of, you know, I have a train, you know, that's not too far away where I'm at. And this is, you know, the whole process of the train that began from the 1840s. I mean, before that, in 1838. The whole notion of what a train can bring and what, you know, to a town, you know, to a culture, to tradition, to even to ancient tales. There is this sense of madness, is what I would call as well, when we hear the train at times, you know, and just imagine back in those days what they would think about the cracking or hearing the engine there. You know, it had to be frightened at times, so there had to be a madness. But I like the whole notion that you brought here and incorporated that aspect. I think you did a fantastic job, and of course your read is always tip my hat off to you, my dear.
Thank you. You know, it's because I just thought of how during kingdoms, how they just moved, if you were a king or a queen, how they moved the people in their palace like pawns. And then picture, there's a crown. There's a crown. And then there looks, there's a jar. And I just thought of olive oil. And then it looks like there's a goblet in the train. And then I saw her holding a book. So the book is colored by the stains of wood and, you know, the cap. That's how they stained it green. And the reason the pages look yellow is due to ages, so I brought that in there. Then I brought that, you know, it's just that and then she's just intently looking straight again. And it to me was like she was looking at the ledger of all the sins that the queen committed against her, and she was just waiting for her to finally pass.
Yeah, amazing. You know, what you were saying, Frank, about the trains, must have been amazing at that time, because that, think about it, that was this huge new technology that could take you all the way across the country, and that was the fastest anybody had ever gone. Right before then it was horses and carriages, but now you have this train that can just kind of take you constantly, you know, through mountains, and it must have been just this kind of amazing new thing to take on train rides. I mean, you know, something that we completely take for granted. So it's actually kind of an interesting thing to think about.
Yeah, it's like the automobile as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Lou, I don't know if you're staying or going, but I hope you feel better.
I'll stay for one more poem because my eyes are not burning. So I'm going to stay for one more because I'm just enjoying myself immensely.
Oh, excellent. We're so happy. So I'm going to...
You're
going to
leave me. Yeah.
Well, no, she's staying, and Frank, you are up. I think Unruly Saint is on the board, at least she was earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can read this for her, that'd be great.
Well, by all means, this is a poem by Unruly Saint, and it's called Safe House. So it goes like this. Floating in the middle of the sea, but I'm not lost as I stargaze on the roof of this canopy. The night says hello like obscure friends, colored as sculpting. Fishes refuse to be caught because they don't want to lose any wishes unless it's to make amends. Many fish swims around my houseboat and I'm struck by moonlight. A girl falls into my arms and I hug and kiss her like it's my last. You were gone far too long, but my love for you will never fade. End of poem.
Mm.
Oh, that's a beautiful poem.
It is a beautiful read and a beautiful poem, and she put her office notes as a terrible poem of mine, which I disagree with more. So.
I disagree.
We all have our own perceptions at times.
Absolutely. But yeah, great read and awesome poem. Lou, what do you think?
I thought Frank beautifully read this poem by Unruly Saint, and I disagree with her because I love poems that draw me into the energy and make me think and make me see into that. And you know, I could feel that. I could feel this person who loves somebody so much and will never stop loving them, even if it's the last time they saw them. And, you know, how we go into the night and look at the moon and, you know, there's so many lights, you know, waiting for a star to fall, wish upon a star. Or something that whatever it is that we believe in from our culture and go out into the wilderness and remember that love and in some way hope that we enchant them by the wishes that we make at night as we stargaze. So I thought this was just lovely.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. I do love the beginning line, floating in the middle of the sea, but I'm not lost as I stargaze. So, like, you have the heavens with you. You're always home, which is, you know, where we all came from. So I think that those are beautiful thoughts. Frank, you read it beautifully. What did you think?
Well, you know, I'm going to have to agree. You know, the whole notion there of just looking up into nature, looking up into the sky itself is just breathtaking, especially at night when you can see stars and, you know, you can see the glint as well. I like the notion here of what Miss Longing, first I thought it was a beautiful poem. She says it's a terrible poem, but I thought it was a beautiful poem. I like the longing aspect of this poem here that's reflected in the last two lines there. You know, you go on too long, but my love for you will never fade. This is just a beautiful thing, you know. I find myself that often, you know, going out and looking out at, you know, when I'm out to sea here or when I'm traveling, to be it with nature, I always find something that I can identify, you know, and something that bonds me with it, with experiences. And when it comes to this type of experience, love in itself, a romance, you know, you always are fond of the things that you share with that person, you know, and it tends to be mostly experiences of places that you've been with that person. So that really, it really made me think there.
Yeah, that's a really good point. You do remember, right, the place. It's not necessarily the person, but, like, you know, you remember the, you know, the places. When you go to these places, you remember that it's the people that you were there with that you remember. That's a really good point, Frank. And Bobby, take us home with the comments.
Well, I enjoyed the piece. I was trying to tie it to something that might have provoked or inspired to one of the pieces of artwork, and I keep getting drawn back to the goldfish because she does speak of fishes around the boat, and I can see where just that one image, like we were talking about, just the slightest linkage to something is enough provocation to bring back a flood of memories. So I enjoyed the brevity. I was very glad to see a new author in our contest, and like I said, I think the goldfish was the tether, and I hope to see more writing from this person in the future.
Absolutely, thank you. All right, and Pee-wee's on the board, so I'd like to read his, and then Frank, we're going to do yours next after that, if that's okay. And I'm going to put this up. Bobby, why don't you give it a read?
I will. Just as soon as I swallow this piece of cookie.
Excellent. Oh, goodness. Now, you had to say that. Now, you had to say cookie. Now I have to have a cookie before I go to bed.
Well, come on over. I have chocolate chip cookies.
Awesome. My favorite there.
You know what they say. Come to the dark side. Come to the dark side. We have cookies.
That's right.
Okay. All righty. We have, there we go. Tightrope. All righty. Tightrope tomorrows. iridescent light flitters through the breeze, towing the line that separates faces of insanity. Absconding with your mind, feasting on your thoughts, brain being raped by the demons you had wrought. Can't say why they came, faces that forever stay, torturous, demonic shrieking, unbearable in your brain. Driving you to the ledge at the brink of insanity, tightrope of tomorrow's, this tenuous future to be. Inherently ignorant and blind to your plight, brightest days have become your darkest nights. Finding insanity's screaming demons preferable to a life of reason. Giving in to let darkness take control, tightrope of tomorrow's, holding up no more. As you stand, rope taut, but not long, the faces at your sanity, life leeched your strong. Tightrope snapped, falling into this hole you can't miss. When madness is calling you, shouldn't gaze into the abyss. End poem.
Awesome read. And I really like Pee-wee's titles. He always has great titles, I think. And Tightrope of Tomorrow, that's a really interesting thought. And like he's saying here, you know, don't look into the future, right? And that tightrope of tomorrow, like how close to madness are you? How on the edge are you? And that tightrope of tomorrow, are you going to actually be able to make it? Is it going to break? You know, it's an interesting way of thinking of, you know, the psychology of what we all go through and what tomorrow could bring depending on how wound up or how, you know, what happened to you today. So really interesting, as always, from Pee-wee. And Frank, let's start with you.
First of all, it was a wonderful read there. I think the poem is also was a wonderful doc, right? You know, there's one thing, if I can say very brief, that I enjoy as a writer myself when it comes to doc pieces is psychological tear, in that sense. You know, we know all about monsters and myths and that, but when we talk about psychological tear, particularly a personal nature, it makes it even much more binding. It just bonds us together with this experience here. He did a fantastic job there. Every line here is just imbued with suspense, but it also talks about a serious nature, and that is with dealing with life and its complexities and the madness itself of struggling in life. And having to confront it, you know, even in its most abhorrent manner, and that shadow that lingers, that really just doesn't want to go away. And I like the tightrope aspect to it as well, because he did a fantastic job of just making it suspenseful there. So this poem was just one heck of a poem. I really was completely glued from the read, from the beginning to the end.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Frank. And Bobby, you did do an awesome read with this.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Thank you. I enjoyed it. It is a very compact write. I like the tightness of the stanzas, the phrasing, very economical, very everything in here was chosen with a great deal of care, and the end result is storytelling at its very finest, with no fripperies.
Yes, absolutely. All right, cool. Thank you, Pee-wee, very much for the poem. And I don't know why, I'm not sure why he said this, it was kind of funny. He said, I almost choked on a Lucky Charm last night. And I said, well, it was lucky then, because you didn't actually choke. So I don't know why, I don't know what that had to do with anything, but Pee-wee said that in the comments. So I thought I'd,
put it on there.
Take it to the bank.
Exactly. Oh, that was on the tightrope. Yeah, there you go.
Well, there we go.
Great job, Pee-wee. Thank you. All right, cool. So I put Frank's up now, and if we can get the SoundCloud, he put a SoundCloud there. If we can get that played, that would be fantastic.
is a potentis presage luminova ostrotwick manor, an inimical satanical force, witness of an unprecedented malediction, a place where the sins of a malefactor are engraved in absolute terror. For there is a hall bringing a celerity shiver down your spine. This all I acknowledge is the tale about the forsaken children of the Shire, whose fate was condemned to the implacable doom of foolish superstition. And echoic voices of a troubling torture and weeping resound. The peculiar haunting shrew of their just vengeance invoked. The eldritch myths of the clowns hover below the unholy twilight, a vespertine haunting of the fierce mastiffs from the thick vault. Stirs in a bird the ravenous hunger of the upturned-headed spectre, lingering in the Stygian shade within the bottomless pit of hell. But the shadows glide out and wander the borders of the English manor. Beware the intense incantation of the shimmer in their eyes, as the burning fire from the candles of the chandelier reflect a sinister glare. And the ebony raven's crypts a welcome of the menacing night. The noise of footfalls are heard creaking from the spiraling staircase of insanity. Listen. The silence is broken.
Awesome read, Frank. Great job. And yeah, again, you know, the imagination that's coming out tonight is really, really kind of amazing. I mean, everyone's really taking these paintings in such an imaginative way. You know, I'd love to see. I don't know if you've ever done this, Frank, but I'd love to see a novel or short stories from you. You know, you write a lot of love poems. Oh, you do.
I do have short stories. Yeah, I have short stories. Yeah, I can send you a link
to them. That'd be great. That would be fantastic. I would love to read some. Because you know, you write a lot of love poems, a lot of romantic poems. But you, when you write these kind of stories, are really descriptive things. I think it's just really fabulous. Like I like the way you took this, where the, you know, the picture is a picture of a manor with some kind of floating children in front of it. For those looking, you know, I like how you kind of went into the just everything around there. So it wasn't necessarily like, you know, descriptive horror. It was more kind of just everything that's happening around them. You know, it stirs in a burr the ravenous hunger of the obtenerated specters lingering in the Stygian shade within the bottomless pit of hell. So there's this real description of kind of the feel of this place with it, where everybody is, I thought was just beautiful. And yeah, I would love to read some of your stories. That would be great.
I'll send them to you afterwards.
Thanks, Frank. That would be awesome. Yeah, but really beautiful and haunting descriptions. Fantastic take on the prompt. Absolutely.
Thank you very much, sir. And thanks for the prompt itself, and inspiring for this poem. I really like the, you know, people don't really know too much, but those who do, you know, I write my friendship poems and those romantic poems, but the poems that I really enjoy most are these types of dark poems here.
Ah, but you do a fantastic job at it, and I do enjoy, I hear you, you know, do these a lot, and I really, really enjoy them. And the prompts, that's all Bobby. She comes up with the contest. So, Bobby, how do you think Frank did with this prompt?
Oh, I really was hoping that someone would embrace this particular prompt and do something with it. And by gosh, Frank, you've really You've really done a masterful bit of storytelling. I mean, it is a very unnerving a prompt. I mean, if you look at it very closely, all these faces, these disembodied faces of children floating in front of this what looks like derelict a building, and for what I have just said in my reading, this could be an insane asylum or some kind of an asylum that they used to put children or handicapped or and just basically put them away and forgot them. And here are these faces of these forgotten children staring out, because you look at the windows, there's bars on the windows and bars on the doors. And it's a very very disquieting, and the chain link fence is a very disquieting picture. And you've taken and made a superb story out of this, and just again with your choice of words, you had fun with this one. Obtenebrated, very nice, just and simple. Eldridge Wald, words that don't frequent everyday language find themselves comfortably ensconced in our writings, and they add that little bit of flavor that you're looking for.
I was thinking about you in this poem as well. When I wrote this poem, I was thinking about you. So I thought about,
You always do a masterful job of that, and it's a delicate and a detailed touch to your work that I always enjoy. Is these choices of words? It's kind of like, you know, why say stubborn when you can say obdurate?
Yeah, there you go.
There you go, and it gives a whole different flavor to the writing. But this is beautifully done piece. Thank you for this. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah. I appreciate it. I just want to say one quick thing really quickly before I forget. Poem here was actually inspired, I'm not sure, but there's a lot of English manors out there in the UK that really have this, mythology. You know, they're known for haunted houses there. But this was actually inspired by, I did write, Strudwick, it's just a surname I added. But this was inspired by a manor that I did see on the internet, and I was looking for something to, visualize to give me a bit of more of inspiration there than the prompt. And I found a little bit of details to a certain manor that had a little bit of attachment to the prompt as well. So I used a combination of that for this poem.
Oh, marvelous. Yeah, I've done that too. I've looked for things like that in reality. That I did that. I think last year's piece, I came upon a story about a forest in Hungary. I'm all right. No more tea for me. you don't know what I'm putting in it. But in the Slavic area, there's a woods that the people around it swear. It's like the Bermuda Triangle. Things go in there and never come out. And when I read about this, I folded it into my writing, and it lends such a flavor of reality to what you're talking. And plus the fact that it grounds you, and it grounds your thinking and your writing. Into something that actually is something that there's something else that someone has written about. So thank you for that. It was a great piece.
You're welcome. Thank you very much, son. I don't want to take more time now, so we can proceed to the next poem there. Thank you to both of you for great comments.
Of course, yeah, no problem. It was an awesome poem. I was very much looking forward to this one. And cool, yeah, let's move on. So I'll give this one a read. I believe it's my turn, and I just posted by Paul Brott called Nocturnes and Requiems. She had it turned just last November. Cobblestones made psalms sound better. The burning roof, the window, the widow's walk, she called this home around the clock. Candles flickered to all her pieces, nocturnes full of death deceases. Composition unlike no other, Ferez's favorite, behead my brother. Her organ piped out requiems, like a song, like a long, somewhat forgotten son. She eats at home. She calls DoorDash. For them, she'll play the Monster Mash. She'll play the mash. She'll play the Monster Mash. 'Twill be a graveyard smash. She'll cash in on a flash. She'll play the Monster Mash. End poem. And this was extremely descriptive and fun, and I just love the take on the prompt. I was hoping somebody did this one, too. So, yeah, we're going to move on. And, Frank, what are your thoughts?
Well, you know, I have to say, you know, I have not seen the Monster Mash, but I have to say I used to love that song as a child, the Monster Mash. Yep. I like the wit there, the way into there. But, you know, this whole, the prompt is very vivid, you know. You've got a woman there, a young woman there, playing a piano with a burning house, amidst the burning house. And I like the way he takes the prompt there and describes, you know, the burning roof, you know, the widow's walk, the candles. There's so much imagery. It's not a long poem, but it's very vivid. It has more of a 19th century feel to it, you know, a bit of a Victorian feel to it. You know, if you take away the Monster Mash and that, you know, the wit, there is that sense of, you know, a Victorian right there. And so I do like the way the poet was able to use be influenced by the prompt and use that so vividly in that first, I would say, the first stanza there, in particular in the second one as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought Paul did a great job. It was really interesting just where he went with this. Bobby, your thoughts?
I enjoyed it also. I like the fact that there are writers out there who will take darker material and they'll inject a little humor into it. It depends on where the dark humor is going. It was just that, like, this is a spoof. And it's and the fact that here's a young woman who's playing violently on a house that's afire, and it's on top of an organ or a piano, and candles everywhere and branches growing out of it. I mean, the yard work in it, and it's on an uneven surface too. The fact that, and then she gets just oblivious to everything, just having a grand time. And our Paul Brock took this and said Dan had a good time with it, which I strongly suspect when the artist painted this, he had a good time as well. So, well, I think, as they say, a good time was had by all.
Absolutely, absolutely. Hey, Halloween's supposed to be fun, right? It's supposed to be connecting with the spirits, not necessarily being scared by them. So I'm glad we're having fun.
Yeah.
Speaking of fun, we're going to have Bobby read one by Betty Page. That's going to be fun.
There we go.
I'll channel Betty. I'll take off my underwear. How's that? Oh, wait, I don't have it. I was terrible, bad, old joke. I was in the barracks. I was an officer, and I was going to school, and I was geographically a geographical bachelor. Basically, the family was on the other side of the country, and I was in the barracks, and I was walking down the passageway to a friend's room, and one of the guys came popping out of his room to chat, and he looks down at my bare feet, and he says, nice shoes. And so I looked at him, I said, you like that? I got underwear to match. He didn't have much to say after that.
Did you forget to mention the wardrobe there, Bobby, there?
There are no malfunctions. There's no wardrobe.
There you go.
You could get right to the chase. And on that perverse little note, we have Labyrinth Clock. Ooh, I was hoping someone would write to this one. This particular prompt is so rich in detail. And this is written by Betty Page. It's like in her usual Sanrio chain format. So let's see what Betty did with this. Running through doorways, secret tunnels, deep beneath hollow corridors. Golden bells ringing midnight has struck the hour. opened new portals, lost ancient tunnels, discovered but just a few adventures await. On the other side lies hidden secret gardens children love to play, lush, magical lands, anything you can imagine, rainbows, water slides, amusement park rides, funnel cakes, cotton candy, swirled unicorn pops, mystical castles, masquerade party dancing, emerald pine trees, picturesque beaches, lakes, rivers, waterfalls, blue, fantasies for two. End poem.
Excellent read. And yeah, I for some reason, like, the Dungeons and Dragons came to mind with this when I saw the picture, and kind of where she went, but she went all over the place to all different, you know, fantasies and mysteries and things you can discover. So very interesting. Frank, your thoughts?
Yeah, I got the feeling of what's that? I'm trying to think of that other one. That not the. I can't really think of the name of the near. What's I'm thinking of the film there that's deals with fantasy. Nirvana, no, is it? Or am I wrong? I'm trying to think. What is that?
Labyrinth.
Where she's in a closet, well, a wardrobe there, and she comes out. I'll look it up afterwards. So I don't want to take more time, but it does remind me of that. Yeah, Narnia, that's it. Narnia, I'm sorry. Narnia goes on to the realm of fantasy. So this actually really made me think more of that. But I really like the whole notion of the way, you know, she really focuses on the clock there, and how that clock really, you know, it goes from being, you know, something surreptitious to something so merifical, you know, wonderful. You know, and I'd like, you know, the way she ends it there with the picturesque beaches, the rivers, the waterfalls. You know, there's a mystery aspect to the beginning, but then there is, you know, which is it's playful as well. It seems like, you know, a bit of childish in the sense of, you know, what we inspire to as children there. And this poem, I don't think we ever leave being a child in the end, because we keep our imagination, and our imagination starts from childhood. So I thought she did a fantastic job, and I do apologize if I didn't recognize or remember the name of that film, Narnia. But thank you for telling me that, Bobby.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. And Bobby, go ahead.
It's by a series of writings by C.S. Lewis.
Yeah, there you go.
Good. Chronicles of Narnia. I like the fact that here's a clock that it opens onto a library. There's one person in there with a light. There's a book laying outside. But here, it's from her writing, she's looked at the spines of the volumes inside this hidden library, almost like a hidden garden, and where the children love to play. Well, here's a hidden library where the adults can play, and this is just right for two. You go in, you shut the door, and you can be with someone, with your imagination, with whatever is there to take you on mind trips, just flights of fantasy. And she's seen all that just from looking inside this clock. It's a wondrous piece of writing that shows us how magical literature can be.
Absolutely. Thank you, Betty. All right, I'm going to post one more up here. I'm going to give it a read. This is by Writing Stuffs, called Horrors Haunt My Memory Chests. And it goes like this. I search the nebulous halls of my mind, stumbling, staggering back through time, rummaging through the plethora of memory chests. Tick-tock, tick-tock, each echoing footstep that resonates upon these hallowed walls brings familiar tapping on my shoulder, like a specter luring me away from my path. brick upon silent brick, the images, silent movies upon my gray-celled screen, transitioning into childhood memories, buried within the sentient haze of yesteryear. The dangling leg of a monotone panda bear hangs listless between the bricks, reminding me that the animals were always my trusted friends. Between the pages of a now parchment comic book, mind is jettisoned into Saturday morning cartoons and the one day of my week in a childhood spent without fear. Spine-chilling memories of daycare violence split my senses, and I scramble up a ladder to that upper story of escape into teen years. Echoes of the voices there conjure old friends I met while escaping the cagalostrial vileness of the sitter's threats. I realized there were humans with hearts and consciences like me. They believed all adults were to be feared, bell-scarred and terrorized into subservience. We now stood together, aware enough to speak out. A broken brick I pried open once before, jabbed my arm as I walked by those missing years where I'd been burned, the night terrors hidden behind it, like a phantom awaiting to its escape, hurtling me back into childhood beatings and that monster in the woods who devours a child's spirit like it was candy. Why do I keep prying at this brick? It's not as if I want to actually see what's behind it. Or perhaps I must, to sever those tenacious chains that keep the night terrors clinging. One, two, three links severed, and the light of hope keeps getting brighter. End poem. Wow, what a deep and thought provoking this is about childhood violence and so forth. I'll let you guys comment. I just wanted to say, I mean, out of all the things in this, the one that struck me for some reason that Saturday morning cartoons, the only place spent without fear. And I do remember as a kid almost being hypnotized, like you're in that world. You know, I'm not as much now. I do get into still media and so forth, but I do remember just how much you get into it, how absorbed you are, because it's just this weird, fascinating thing you've never seen before. And we've now seen, we've all seen thousands of hours of television and movies, and it was more of a magical escape when you were a kid. That's just the line that stuck with me. But Frank, let's start with you.
Yes, I'm going to agree. You know, that's a medium that we had. It was afforded to us at that age. You know, perhaps our parents grew up with the radio, grew up with the television. And it does make me think back as well to we were talking about the train, you know, how people, you know, certainly I can relate to that aspect. The film is haunting, you know, from the beginning. There's a plethora of memories here that just always if I can do justice to this film, in that content, and to say or to utter the relevance of what's being described here, you know, these men being experienced here were very much painful here for the most part, but I like that there is a self-admission in this film here, you know, and self-awareness as well. You know, it does make us think about, you know, what we go through in our lifespans, you know, whether we're children or adults, you know, this is just a clear reminder of that, you know, and it just brought home memories of my own as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and, the little tiny things, I mean, big, huge things like abuse and all that obviously can have a huge effect on children and all through their entire lives, but even these little things can, and it is, all that can kind of build up. So, interesting. Bobby. Bobby, you eating cookies over there?
Yeah, I am. Actually, I was being, I'm trying to balance my tea back to the study here. Listen. As much as I let myself be immersed in this particular piece and references to childhood, and I found myself thinking about things in childhood that, well, they're explainable now, at the time were either wonders or terrors. And I still recall them, and I couldn't tell you what about them left such a lasting impression. But there are, like the monster in the woods who devours a child's spirit. I remember the first time I saw Godzilla, the Japanese version, I had nightmares for 2 weeks straight after it. And I didn't feel it was that frightening at the time. But, and now you look at it, it's comic. But things like that, or the first time
I ever
saw...
Did you not realize that they were somebody who was dressed up? I'm assuming it was somebody who was dressed up.
No. But what really squigged me out, and still to this day, I cannot watch this particular scene in this film as the original filming of The Fly with David Hedison and Vincent Price. The scene out in there where his brother is captured by.
Yeah.
Oh, please don't do that. I will not sleep tonight. I was laying on the floor. It was Christmas time because I remember laying next to the Christmas tree. I had never seen it before. I said, bolt upright. I was horrified. I was absolutely horrified. And just, I think I sat up in bed the whole night just thinking about that particular scene. Even now, I find it unnerving. But just those things that you see in childhood, that they never leave you. It's things that you just, and you remember that passage in the film, and you kind of, and you're an adult, and you're firmly grounded in reality, at least you hope you are, and then you get to that and you say, oh, no, I am not watching that.
mine was The Exorcist there.
But there was another film was a trilogy with Karen Black. She played different roles in a triptych of stories. And the one that I found absolutely unnerving was she was an anthropologist who had come across, she'd purchased on one of her field trips to Africa, a Zuni. It was a warrior from a culture, and it was carved, and it had a gold chain around its waist. And the story that she got with this purchase was the gold chain trapped an evil spirit you know it's coming. You see it coming. I mean, just like, you know, have a tattooed on her forehead. But, of course, the chain falls off. And something happens, the chain falls off, and you've got this 6-inch thing with sharpened teeth and a steak knife chasing her around the house, under coffee tables, under suitcases. I was engaged at the time. I am drawn up into a ball on the sofa. My fiance thinks it's hysterically funny. I said, this is not funny at all. I mean,
it's
terrifying.
It's funny you mentioned Godzilla, because for some, I loved that stuff when I was a kid. My wife, she tells me she was freaked out the first time she got Godzilla too. mine was actually Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory when the girl turned into a blueberry. Freaked the hell out of me. I could not watch that. It was like freaking me. It was like she's gonna explode. It was like I remember that freaking me out that she was turning into a blueberry and I couldn't watch that scene.
It's strange. This little African warrior with a steak knife, and chasing her all over the house, and I'm curled up on the sofa. He thinks this is funny, and I, to this day, I will not. I know the story. I mean, because of course, in the end, the warrior takes over her spirit, it's sitting in a crouched position with a much larger knife, waiting for her mother to arrive. But you know, it's one of those things that you watched it and you go, that's fine. It was very well done. I'm never watching that again. Because it hits something so primal in you. And as a child, you know, that's once you have access to that, that is marked for life. So this is a really quite the writing. Thank you very much. I'm never reading this again.
All right, let's cool. Let's move on here. So we have I think another new person on the show, Skunk Woman, and Frank. If you can give this one a read, that would be great.
All right, this is a poem called "Through Wisdom He Soars" by Skunk Woman, and it goes like this: like a possessed child, head spinning, kind of wild, devils winning, children playing like calls, the elderly dance through the walls, big old eyes in the back telling lies, stay on track. Remote spins through dead trees, the owl wins, he knows everything. From his lips he did hoot, bloody fingertip collecting his loot. Fly a pie, ball of fire in the sky, owl flies higher. In a game of which you'll never win, the owl spits 2 pints of gin. For he is wise above all things, to my surprise. He spreads his wings in the poem.
Great read. Yeah, and we actually had a lot of people write to this prompt, which I really liked, even though this is the first one we've gotten to. But yeah, a lot of people picked this one. Bobby, let's start with you.
I enjoyed the brevity. I like the staccato style of it. I like a possessed child, head spinning, kind of wild, devil's winning. Yeah, those very short hopping sentences do a lot for the flavor, for the mood. Big old eyes in the back telling lies, stay on track. They do a lot for the mood and the reading of it and the way it lands. And I think she's done a very fine job with this particular prompt, which when I put it out there, I thought, now this is a little tepid. I wonder if this is going to attract any attention. Shows you how much I know.
Yeah, no, it got a lot, actually.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah, I thought the flow was fantastic. And Frankie did a great job reading it. What'd you think?
I like.
All right, did I already ask you? I'm sorry, I forgot. I can't remember that. No, I didn't ask you yet. All right, I'm getting tired.
I know it's getting late. That hour there, my friend, as well. My eyes are wandering too. Through wisdom he soars. I really like what Bobby was saying about the aspect of the owl itself. You know, it's just one of these creatures out at night roving, but it's very observant. And I like the way she talks about the aspect of that, you know, what goes around in this poem. You know, I like the way she says, in a game of which you'll never win, the owl spits 2 pints of gin. But, I mean, if you get beyond the rhyme in there, there is a very unique aspect to that, the 4 lines there. But I like the observant nature of what she describes of the poem there with the owl, using the owl in the background there.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. Yeah, the flow was really great. I mean, I really liked her word use, and like Bobby pointed out, nice little short sentences. So, all right, cool. The next one is actually a SoundCloud by Eric Svensson, if we can get that read. And this might be the last one for tonight, but let's see how long the SoundCloud is.
Binocular vision. Fabergé owl eggs an acorn. Babushka complexity of wisdom. Onion adroit wise owl conceals vaulted knowledge. Rings around Saturn nodes a secret. Hearken ye to each wide-eyed owl blink. Seek and ye shall find. Squirrel, while he can, gather inside nuts, store up sustenance, just in case it's a planetary winter of discontentment. So much light to be had in darkness. Finders, keepers. Fabergé owl eggs an acorn. Don't be a pussycat. Dream adrift. But wise, eyes wide open, boat beyond self-imposed notes. Fiery pillar mountains fire thee by night. Gossamer spun cloud shrouds shield thee by day. pillar to post, each babushka contains knowledge. Smallest one contains the seed of life. Wide-eyed owl blinks interstellar links. Satellite dish ears read all thoughts. Beware the radar blips and bleeps. Row, row your boat merrily. Smallest one contains the seed of life. Knowledge of good preferred above evil. Row, row your boat merrily. Brave hearts hunt till they find light in darkness. Dream adrift, but wise, eyes wide open. Binocular vision acquired. Golden acorn dropped, not a penny. Feathered nest epiphany breaks the bank. Farber Jane Pabushka call a truce, just in case it's a planetary winter of discontentment. Heathcliff returns to Wuthering Heights, just in case. Ring-a-ring-a roses, pockets full of Saturn. Play the bard's trump card. Smallest babushka contains seed of life. To thy own self be true. Irony begets golden nugget, acorn insight. End poem.
Thank you, Eric. Awesome SoundCloud. I always love hearing his voice. He really went to some interesting places here. First of all, I like how he thought that acorn was a Fabergé owl egg. It was kind of interesting. But, I mean, he was talking about Shakespeare here and Wuthering Heights and just all kinds of different places that he really went to in this poem. I thought was really interesting. Frank, what did you think?
Well, I agree. You know, he has a wonderful performing voice as well in a very... a wonderful narrating voice, make that just better time for me. I really like the way he just is so descriptive and so metaphorical as well with poetry. You know, he gives us so much imagery throughout his poetry. At times I'm really amazed by the degree of his metaphors and his poetry and the way he just uses it in such a masterful way to describe, you know, the visuals that go on through his poetry. And I like the whole notion of where he captures the owl itself. And babushka, the thing that came up to me was Polish or Russian. I looked it up just to make sure, and it talks about an old woman there. So I like the notion of the wisdom here and what the owl represents, and the babushka just encompasses, you know, the scenery throughout the poem, which is metaphors are just fantastic poem, and fantastic SoundCloud as always.
Yeah, I agree. I really love his voice, and it has this almost like, and I mean this with the utmost respect, like a 1930s like sound to it. He almost sounds like,
yeah.
He reminds me of Alfred Hitchcock speaking, and I mean that in a really good
way.
Yeah,
there you go. I was going to say that too. I was going to say,
you know,
that
he does, but
about him.
He's got that great, and I do like, I believe that is where he was going with this, was the wisdom of the owl, and he kind of was quoting almost all different types of wisdom that he could come from, and yeah, his poems always, I think, warrant multiple reads. You can just get so much out of them, so great comment, Frank, really appreciate
it. He puts a lot of time as well to these poems and these SoundClouds, you know, he's very proficient in that.
Absolutely. He absolutely is. Bobby, what do you think?
Well, I enjoyed also his imagination taking him to the owls, the acorn being an owl Fabergé egg, which I thought was wonderful.
Yeah.
A wonderful flight of fantasy there. But he does a lot of fascinating delving into different mythologies, and he dances back and forth among them, very, very nimbly, is the animal imagery, which is very, very pagan, yet he does speak to Slavic culture. Babushka, Frank, is Slavic. It is Russian. It is also Polish. Sometimes babushka means grandmother. Sometimes babushka means old woman. Where I grew up, a babushka was something you put on your head. It is a scarf. It is a scarf for your head. You tie it under your chin. So you want, you want to go out cold, you put a babushka on your head. Which, which my father found out is babushka. He wanted to, my grandmother's and the mother's mother to come over. He said, Ma, why don't you put a babushka on your head and come on over? And my father was not as nimble with languages as I am. And my grandmother, when she stopped laughing, said, Oh, Harry, why would I want to put a pillow on my head? Which my father suggested she put a pillow on my head. But babushka, yes, is very, very Slavic. It is usually the scarf worn on a woman's head. Babcha is also a Slavic for grandmother or old woman. Or if you really want to get into the weeds, starobaba. Starobaba.
We could go all night there. I'll be there.
For old
the terminology
I'll stop now. I said, I don't want to leave you with an incomplete education, Sifra.
You remember, I'm a linguist as well.
Slavic?
No, Slavic, no.
Slavic? I'll give private lessons.
We'll leave that for another day.
I wondered how you were going to react to that. you're a gentleman and a scholar, Frank. Well, we all love you. Anyway, I baited you and you didn't take it. Anyway, this is the marvelous old piece. I love the expression on the owl's face. It left a lot of meat for people to, for thought to roll around. And I row your boat merrily, smallest one contains the seed of life. You were right, though, dear, in your observations, both of you, that he does take in a lot of territory with this. But if you look at ornithology and you look at the study of the owls and raptors as part of it, that it is so pervasive among so many different cultures that you could have a whole day of owl poetry and never run out.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Well, we have a new record, Bobby. We have 11 carryovers.
Really?
We might even have to skip a contest sometime in the future to catch up. We'll have to see. But yes, so anybody that we didn't get to, we will. Go ahead.
We can plan on of course we cannot disturb the sanctity of the Halloween program, and ours is 29,
yes.
And I strongly suspect we're going to have a whole hockey locker. So why don't we plan on the show after that, which is, I'm pulling up my calendar, thank God for electronic calendars. We have 12 November, and I will gladly give that one up as it is right on the cusp of my birthday. Let's turn that into let's turn it into a specialty program called Bobby's Birthday and Potluck Party.
Oh, that would be great. Hey, if
there
we need
go.
Time,
we
could always
Potluck Poetry Party.
Yep, we'll do these ones here, and then if we need some leftovers, we can have open poetry. So I think it's a great idea.
Yeah.
So
let's take the leftovers from here, and we'll just put them aside for that, and we'll warm them up on 12 November because we'll dedicate 29 October to Phantom of the Opera. Because I have a feeling we get some really kick-ass poetry there, and so whatever's left over from
great.
Plus Veterans Day and whatever other kind of cream of yesterday anyone wants to throw into the pot, we'll do that. We'll have a potluck poetry party on 12 November. How's that?
That would be fantastic. I mean, that's an awesome idea.
Well,
thank you, everybody. Awesome poetry. Frank, thank you for staying the whole time. You were a fantastic guest. We appreciate it.
All right, appreciate that. I'm going to wait for those cookies there, Bobby.
That's right.
Hey, right here for you, Frank, with a cup of tea or red wine or whatever strikes your fancy.
And Pam in the background, as always, running the show. We appreciate it. So everybody have a fantastic night. And, yes, so Halloween, we're on the 29th, right? So we're right there on Halloween.
Woo!
Very exciting.
Good night, everybody.
Thank you, everybody.
To those on the board there, Pee Wee Pound. I know there's other listeners out there that are listening, Kim and Soviet. Good night, everyone, and have a good morning, I guess. Maybe it's me, but I had fun, really fun. Thank you very much for allowing me to be on the show.
Of course, anytime. Yeah, we did too. It was great show. Thanks, Lulu, for sticking it out with your. Ike and all. So, but Frank, awesome. Thanks. Hope we'll see you again. Everybody, have a great night.